fountain blood. She was next to me 1 second, and then she was gone. She'd been eaten while I'd survived. I fought harder for a while after that. For some reason, every time they killed a friend, I became a little crazy for a few minutes. Even though I knew the dead would live again, I was still angry. Then the next snapping set of jaws came down. I was lying on my back now, staring up at four juggers with alien, pitiless eyes. The tails lashed excitedly, and their jaws dripped gore. They'd torn apart the recruit they'd managed to snap up out of the demolished building we were sheltering in, and were now returning to the spot, eager for more. When the jaws came down for me, I was firing, of course, but the chattering rifle didn't seem to be having much effect. At the last moment, I thrust my rifle up into the beast's mouth. I didn't know what else to do. It wasn't designed to have the killing power it needed to penetrate that much bone. The jaws snapped shut early, and the huge head withdrew, taking my snap rifle with it. I was hauled up into a standing position by the strap, which was still wrapped around my arm. I got a close look at the monster that had me. The scales were bright red, almost a crimson, and there was a long, old, ridged scar of gray skin running up its gut. At some point in this monster's past, it had been badly injured. I was inches from the jugger's deadly maw. Dangling and cursing, I managed to slip free and fall back into shelter before the monster could dismember me. I jeered at the lizard, which was still trying desperately to eat me. "Retreat!" shouted Weaponeer Lund. He'd been firing his belcher, and I'd been too busy to wonder why. Now I didn't bother. Like the rest of them, I slithered down into the drilled holes and fell into the tunnels below. The juggers caught one more recruit by the foot and took him apart before we could make it to safety. The weaponeer was on his comm link, reporting in.
"We lost 12. Repeat, Bunker 12 is gone. We've retreated underground."
I thought Bunker was an extravagant name for the burnt, twisted pile of wreckage that we'd been crouching in for the last few hours. They'd once been real bunkers with a roof and a door. Now they all looked like blasted craters. The roof was gone, the walls were stubby and blackened. The interior was a mass of debris shoved into piles. Still, they worked like small forts scattered around the compound, and they were the best protection we had.
"My weapon is overheated,"
the weaponeer reported. I nodded as I climbed to my feet and dusted myself off. That would explain a lot. The black tube he still carried was emitting tendrils of steam and nothing else. I guessed that the heat of the environment and the frequent firefights had overloaded the weapon. I hoped it wasn't permanently damaged. Lund disconnected from the command channel by touching his tapper. He looked at us.
"We're to report to Central. They're hoping the techs can fix my unit. If they can, we're going back up there."
We looked at him grimly, and there were a few groans, but we didn't complain much. What was there to say? We had to fight them up there or wait for them to come down here. I preferred the open field of fire and the protection of the walls to these slimy tunnels. We all did. We made it to the techs, who looked over Weaponeer Lund's unit and, after a few adjustments, declared it serviceable. We were trotting back down the tunnel to our former position when the next attack came.
"I can't believe it,"
Lund said as we followed him up into our bloody nest.
"Why don't they all come at once? They keep coming in waves about a half hour apart. That last wave would have finished us if they'd brought 100 more sets of teeth to the party."
We had no answers for him. We were bone-tired, so we didn't even crack any jokes. I checked the time. Lund was right. They'd been hitting us rhythmically every half hour. In this last attack, we'd lost dozens of troops. I suspected there were only a few hundred of us left in all. We set up again in the nest and tried to push the dead out of our positions. When the other bunkers had gotten our report, they'd unloaded on this location, killing one of our attackers in the center of the nest. The body of a dead jugger is hard to dislodge. The weight was too much to move for only four people. We didn't have the strength to make it do more than flop and shift. We finally got it to the edge of our nest, but no farther. We decided to use the body as a shield and fire over it. I had a new snap rifle by this time, borrowed from a dead comrade. My own had been chewed into uselessness. Once the big body was gone, we had the blasted bits to contend with. As I strained to shovel mounds of charred bone to make a new spot for myself at the edge of the crater, I reflected on my choices in life. Video games hadn't led me to expect this sort of experience. I found myself fantasizing about a quick death during the next go-round. I shook my head to clear it of such defeatist thoughts. We all had a bad feeling about the fourth wave. The only good news was that the twin suns were beginning to go down. On Cancri 9, fighting in the dark was a blessing. The fourth attack began like most of them did, but again their tactics had changed. This time, when they all rushed in, they concentrated on just a few of the bunkers. Instead of sending three or four at each target, they clustered around the same spots where they'd had success before. Ours was one of the lucky bunkers, naturally. Since they'd killed two recruits here and chased the rest of us underground, they decided to try their luck at the same spot again. Weaponeer Lund did his best. He laid out heavy fire, melting two juggers before they even reached us. But our snap rifles only brought down one more, and then we were overrun again. "Retreat! Go down into—" That was all we heard from Lund. We'd all been slithering backward, feeling with our boots for the holes that would allow us to drop back into the tunnel under this position and into relative safety. The weaponeer didn't make it. His head popped off in the jaws of the first saurian to reach the spot, the one that seemed to be leading the charge. As I fell back into the gloom of the tunnel below, I gazed up at the bloody, triumphant monster that had taken Lund's head. I realized with a jolt of recognition that I knew this monster. It had scales of crimson and a belly gouge along its gut. The mouth was painted red with Lund's blood. It looked proud of itself. I fired a stream of pellets up out of the tunnel and into its face until it shied away. Trotting toward the central gathering point where we were supposed to rally if we were pushed back, I began wondering, how had that same lizard returned to that same spot? When Leeson stepped into the rally point, I tried to get his attention. Leeson's face was white. He'd lost a hand and plenty of blood. I decided it was best to wait to bring up my thoughts. He might not live to see the next wave. Specialist Mattis came to work on him next. He soaked the stump of Leeson's wrist in orange fluid, and I could tell it burned. Leeson was in agony. A needle appeared and plunged into his arm. After stiffening, Leeson's pain eased quickly. "I could give you another, adjunct," Mattis said quietly. Leeson looked up but shook his head. "That would be toxic." Mattis nodded his head. "Sometimes a man has to know when he's beaten. Your hand is missing, sir. You can't keep fighting like this."
"Bullshit,"
slurred Leeson. "I'm a commander. I'm one of the last. I can give orders with one hand. Stop pumping happy drugs into me."
"Yes, sir," murmured Mattis as if he thought the adjunct was crazy. My estimation of Leeson rose at that moment. He was going to stay here fighting to beat the enemy. He was committed. It was hard not to admire that in an officer.
"What are you gawking at, recruit? Never seen a man with one hand before."
As a matter of fact, I had seen several during my short service in Legion Varus, but I decided not to bring it up. "Sir, I noticed something that I thought I should report. That is, if you are in good enough shape to listen."
"Talk all you want, I'm feeling fine."
To demonstrate, he waved his stump at me. Disinfectant fluids dribbled. I figured he was at least partially high from whatever Mattis had shot into him. I wasn't sure if that was better than pain or not when it came to giving commands, but that wasn't my decision to make. "I saw a red jugger up topside," I told him, "during the last attack. Then I saw him again just now." Leeson frowned at me, concentrating on my words.
"So the hell what?"
he asked.
"They come in all kinds of colors. Saw three lime green bastards recently running together like they were brothers."
"Right, sir. But bright red ones are rare. And this one had a scar. A belly scar I recognized. He came at us twice, once this attack and once the last one. And he knew enough to kill our weaponeer right away this time.
Yeah, so what? If you don't have a point, stop bothering me.
Sorry, sir, I said quickly. The point is that the report said all the lizards from the last wave were destroyed. All of them. If that's true, how can this one red bastard be back?
Leeson stared at me for several seconds. I could tell he was trying to concentrate.
You're saying that we didn't get all of them? That at least one ran off?
That's a possible answer, adjunct.
What the hell else could it be?
He snarled at me suddenly. I suspected the initial euphoria of the drug Mattis had injected was fading. He was wincing in pain again, as if he was being repeatedly stung. Leaning to his right side, he cradled his damaged limb.
I'm sorry, sir. I'll head back to my post.
No point, he snapped. We're abandoning 12. You have no weapon here. I'm reassigning survivors to man other positions.
Right. Who should pick up the weaponeers too, adjunct?
Huh? Oh, nobody. Leave it down here. Has a bad actuary anyway, according to the techs.
I nodded disappointedly. He laughed at me.
You wanted a chance to fire a heavy weapon, didn't you? Well, you don't have the kit or the training. You have to wear a heavy generator, and you have to know what you're doing. There's backwash, you know. You can't see it, but it's there. If you don't have training, you're as likely to take out your own team with that thing as the enemy.
I didn't think it was all that difficult, but I nodded.
I'll be going, sir.
I turned to leave, but his good hand lashed out and gripped the fabric of my sleeve.
McGill,
he asked, giving me an odd look. If you see that red lizard of yours again, tell me about it. I smiled.
Will do, sir.
As I walked across the rally point, Specialist Mattis flagged me down.
Good news, recruit, he said.
About the last wave of lizards?
I asked. Don't worry, they'll never kill us all. He paused.
I don't know about that, he said. But I've been in communication with Corvus. I've talked to the orderlies. They've dropped the charges. You're in the clear.
That is good news. How did that happen?
He shrugged and gave me a thin smile.
Sometimes people change their minds. At least now you know you can die down here in peace.
Doesn't have to happen, I said. We'll win.
That's the spirit,
Mattis said half-heartedly. I could tell he didn't think we were going to win this one. I could easily see why. Each attack took out at least a dozen men. More, each time. At this rate, we'd be down to a handful huddling underground by morning. Then the smaller Saurians would infiltrate the tunnels and finish us off.
Hold on a second, he called out to me as I turned to go back to my post.
Specialist?
He gave me a strange look.
I could take care of it now, you know, he said quietly.
One injection, and it will all be over. You're fighting on a bad grow anyway. Let me fix the mistake. I opened my mouth, then closed it again. I saw he had a needle in his hand. The syringe was a large one, and it dribbled amber liquid.
I'm fine, I said.
Hey!
Roared a voice. We startled and looked toward Leeson, who wandered closer. He glared at Mattis.
What are you, some kind of ghoul?
He demanded. I'm sorry, sir, but I'm sure I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, Leeson grumbled. Leave my man alone. I need every hand topside. If you offer another soldier a free trip into space, I'll put you on report.
Mattis made a prim face. He looked as if he smelled something putrid.
That won't be necessary, adjunct.
Make sure it isn't.
I left quickly after that. What was it with bios and killing people? They seemed to want to offer up death as some kind of benefit. I suppose that to them it looked like a good thing. This battle was hopeless and vicious.
Wasn't a needle and a quick heart-stopping injection better than getting torn apart by hungry monsters? But as I reached my new post, I began to wonder. Mattis's expression hadn't been kind, it had been devious. He'd been hiding something. Why tell me I was in the clear, then offer me a quick death? Could it be he'd lied about me being in the clear? I wasn't sure what his motives were, but I decided I didn't want to die just now. I reached my new post and slithered up into position. There were a number of dead juggers and troops around, and I didn't like the look of things. This bunker had been overrun more than once, just as my last one had. The only difference was this position still had an active weaponeer. "Weaponeer Borges?" I asked. "Can I do a quick patrol? I want to check my firing ranges and entry points."
"Out there?"
he asked, his voice indicating he thought I was crazy. He was a beefy guy with eyebrows that came together in one big black caterpillar when he frowned, which he was doing right now.
"You're nuts! That pea shooter of yours isn't going to do anything but piss them off anyway."
"Still, Specialist," I said, "I'd like to see what's nearby before the next wave. They aren't due for 10 minutes. Borges huffed at that.
"Enemies don't keep appointments, recruit. But okay, if you want to be the first on the buffet this time, I'll let you. Keep in mind, if I see you jump into a lizard's mouth just to get out of here, you're going on report."
"Right, sir," I said, and walked away across the compound. I heard Borges and the others laughing behind me. I didn't care. At some point, every soldier caught up in a long battle stops caring about the small stuff. It took me a few minutes, and I was beginning to get antsy by the time I found what I was looking for. A different corpse, one I recognized, was near one of the entrances on a pile of juggers stacked 3 high. It was a crimson lizard. I shined my belt light on it to be sure, and took several snaps. The rigid belly scar was precisely the same as the last 2 times I'd seen this exact enemy. What the hell was going on? Chapter 31. I was still out eyeballing the mysterious red jugger when the next attack came. I wasn't sure, but it seemed early to me. Maybe the lizards were losing patience. The first clue came with the sound of scrabbling along the walls outside. We didn't have scouts out there anymore because there weren't enough troops left alive for that. We didn't have cameras on the walls either, as they'd all been knocked out. Since our techs weren't even allowed to fly spy drones, we were blind. When I heard the stealthy sounds of saurians on the move, I didn't bother waiting around. I sprinted for the crater-like shelter we'd been assigned. "Incoming!" I shouted on the squad channel. Ahead of me, the guys in the bunker scrambled into position.
"Are you sure, McGill?"
demanded Specialist Borges. I didn't bother to answer. The enemy was proving me right. They were pouring in through the damaged walls, and this time they weren't fooling around. Right before they hit, the sky lit up overhead. Artillery. It couldn't be anything else. When this long battle had begun days earlier, both sides held off on using big guns because we couldn't risk killing the Nairbs. Now that they were absent, we still hadn't deployed so much as a mortar. I knew that in our case, it was because we hadn't been issued any since the heavy troops had withdrawn. For the Saurians, I suspected they didn't want to be seen using a weapon we didn't have. They wanted to prove they could beat us without superior arms. So far, they were pulling it off. I was definitely feeling the burn. We were losing this fight, one death at a time. I dove into the bunker, and small arms fire splattered the burnt walls all around me. I didn't know juggers could carry guns.
"Raptors!" Borges shouted. "Hundreds of them! This is it!"
He was right. The enemy force wasn't made up of all juggers this time. They were coming in with regular Saurian troops. At least they weren't armored, but that didn't make me feel much better. The smaller ones were smart and just as deadly. What they didn't have in sheer size and power they made up for with cunning, and in this case, weaponry. Of the 2 lizard types I'd met up with on this godforsaken hole of a planet, I think I preferred to fight with the juggers. I felt less paranoid when I fought them. I think that's why. They came in charging hard, and they either died or you did. They terrified me at first, but the fear had lessened as I grew accustomed to fighting with them. You didn't have to worry about getting taken out by a sniper or an infiltrator who'd snuck in behind your lines. Wriggling like a frightened snake into my position right over the legs of my comrades, I put my snap rifle up and sought a target. The others were rattling away, providing suppressing fire. This seemed to be slowing the enemy down. They were working their way toward us, dashing from one broken scrap of puffcrete to the next. Using the night scope, I could see they weren't heavily armored. They were light troops like our own. I thought about that for a second, and it made sense. They'd been watching us for years, copying our techniques and apparently some of our organization as well. I'd seen both unarmored light saurians and heavily armored pros. These definitely fell into the former category. That was a relief, because I knew my gun could kill them. The second I saw a snout, I opened up. Firing short bursts, I forced the raptor to jerk back, but then he made a sprint for another closer piece of cover. Around him, a group of his comrades began to fire back at us. They sprayed our bunker with rounds. The bullets sparked green against our sheltering walls when seen through my scope. Lizards weren't great marksmen, but I realized they were covering the one that was on the move. I took a chance. I lifted my head up and held the trigger down. The recoil was jumpy on my weapon as it went into full auto mode. Fighting to control it, I swept it after the saurian who was exposed. How that bastard could run! Fortunately, not even a sprinting 300-pound lizard can outrun a sliver from a snap rifle. I hit him a dozen times, and he fell in a tumbling heap. It took 10 times as much fire to bring down a jugger, because there was so much more meat and bone on them. This seemed to piss off the others behind him. They lashed our position with fire, and we were forced to duck and wait it out. "Hold! Hold! Now!" shouted Borges, timing the enemy tactics. He called it perfectly. The moment he said now, we wriggled back up into our fighting positions and found them advancing, firing sporadically into our bunker. They'd gotten brave when we hadn't returned fire for a while. We mowed them. The weaponeer finally unleashed the power of his big tube, shortening up the focus and sweeping the beam laterally. At least 10 of them went down, their bodies seared with huge stripes of blackened flesh. They thrashed and made strange croaking sounds. I ignored the ones he nailed with the plasma sweep and poured rounds into those that were still on their feet. It was over in 15 seconds, I'd say. Broken, the enemy fled for cover in every direction. We cheered and high-fived one another in the bunker. Borges slapped me on the helmet twice, roaring, "Did you see that? Did you see that?" I assured him that I did. But I wasn't in any mood for celebrating. I used my scope to scan the other bunkers to our sides and rear. "Specialist!" I shouted. "Left flank, I think they breached 5. Everyone shut up, slithered back into their spots, and swung their weapons to the west. The sounds of slaughter came in over our headsets as Borges connected to command chat and piped it to our helmets. I wasn't happy he decided to share the input. Men and women screamed and hyperventilated into their microphones as they died. A few times I thought I heard crunching sounds. We all did, and it was making us wince. "Let's engage," he said. I couldn't argue with him. Bunker 5 was pretty much gone, and the odds of us hitting a living human target were low. It looked like a feeding frenzy over there. We reloaded as quickly as we could, shifted on our bellies, and waited for the signal. Borges announced our entry into the fight with a direct beam into the pack of them. It punched a hole through the mass of bodies which came out the other side. We supported his big gun with our sprays of bullets. Caught from behind and exposed, the enemy melted. They broke off the attack and scattered for cover. A few of them, however, dove into the mess in the bunker and returned fire. I was shocked to see our own snap rifles used against us. Not every saurian was armed, but they were resourceful. They figured out the mechanism and forced us to respect the incoming hail of metal. It wasn't well aimed, but it was accurate enough to make us hunker down.
I wish our rifles had friend or foe recognition on them, Borges said. If we built them, they would.
I hugged the ground and found I agreed with him, but I knew we couldn't build our own accelerator rifles. Advanced weaponry was to be produced by the manufacturing planet that held the patent, which in this case was a world called Coventry by humanity, and some unpronounceable series of cliques by the native population of insects. Unless a competing race could prove they had a better product, no one in this sector of the galaxy was allowed to sell even a knockoff. Earth would have liked to copy and steal the tech, but we weren't allowed to make or distribute anything similar. Since they had to accommodate a variety of races, snap rifles were made to fit an average-build humanoid, or just about anything with hands or claws. They were a bit too small for us, and even smaller in the claws of a saurian, but I suppose that gave them the broadest possible market. They were fine weapons, that much I had to admit. While we exchanged fire with the enemy that had taken Bunker 2, disaster struck. We'd all focused on the breach in our lines, wanting to repel it. Borges was on the command line talking to Leeson and following orders. The officers wanted the enemy out of that bunker and pushed back. Apparently we'd lost about a quarter of our entrenched positions. Unfortunately, the enemy had other ideas. The juggers we'd been expecting in the first place finally made their appearance. Somehow we'd all thought the enemy had shifted tactics, using armed saurians instead of the regular timed waves of juggers. That turned out not to be the case. The juggers showed up right when it looked like we were going to win. The sound of their pounding feet, each step slamming down with around 2,000 pounds of force, alerted us. I was the second guy to notice the enemy charge, squirming around to face the new unexpected threat. The first guy who saw them fired about a dozen rounds, then simply screamed and died a moment later, chomped by jaws as big as a bulldozer's. I didn't even know his name. That made me feel bad as I watched him die. I thought in a strange, accelerated time-sense sort of way that a man should know who was fighting and dying next to him. Sure, I'd only been assigned to this squad a few hours ago, but I still felt I should know the guy's name. The jugger was a midnight blue female as big as a truck. Probably her vast size had gotten her here faster, ahead of the pack. In triumph, she ate the nameless trooper next to me, taking the upper torso and the head into her mouth and crunching down. Legs dangled and blood ran. I heard a triumphant, burbling sound of pleasure coming from the vast throat. Then, the jugger was blasted apart. Borges had gotten his big tube around and aligned. Hit point blank, the blue giant died on her feet. The beam was so violent at this close range, part of the lizard's skull was missing. Before the jugger's body hit the ground, however, more of them came charging in after her. They seemed endless. Behind them, like excited cattle dogs, came the smaller lizards we'd routed earlier. They hid behind their bigger cousins. At least I knew that they respected our firepower. The battle went from bad to worse. I'd been overrun before, and I could say a man fights differently in the final moments, when he knows he's going to die. Intellectually, you might know that you're going to be revived later, that you're going to come back to live another day. In my case, where my odds were iffy after having personally pissed off every bio aboard Corvus, I still had that possible ace in the hole. But when you're about to be eaten, it just doesn't matter. The basic, more primitive mind inside all of us takes hold. You scream, you roar at the top of your lungs, and curse, and possibly wet yourself. But you don't even know it's happening because you're too busy laying out every ounce of firepower into every soft alien belly you see in front of you. That's what I did. I would like to say I did some kind of genius move, something no one had foreseen, something I didn't think of until this final, fateful moment. But I didn't. I was on my knees, my weapon in my hands, chattering out every sliver of metal it could until the magazine ran dry. After it was empty, I kept the trigger down and the cylinder kept obediently whirling around, never jamming but firing dry. I was spraying nothing but spit, which ran down my chin inside my helmet. I could barely see when I finally figured out I was empty. My helmet had fogged up a little on the inside. Had my AC quit again, it didn't matter. Three of the big lizards were down, as were most of my squatties. Only Borges and I were still in one piece, and the world was full of giant lizards. For a few seconds, the battle broke around us, and the lizards frenzied on other bunkers. Maybe we'd been too hard of a nut to crack, or maybe they'd seen another one overwhelmed and were anxious to get in on the finish. I looked right and left. Bunker 5 was ancient history. 7 and 9 were nothing but a churning mass of scaly flesh. Raised tails whipped excitedly over the defeated team strongholds like vicious flags. I watched the lizards run around in circles, looking for a way into the press to feed. The way their legs pumped, casting up dust and blood behind them, was amazing to see. They came at you with such singularity of purpose, with such a berserker rage in their hearts and eyes. I knew it was different for them. They only had one life to live. If I'd had more time to think, I might have admired them for their perfect savagery. They weren't animals. They knew what they were doing. They were going to kill us or die trying. Then I saw the one, the Crimson Jugger. I'd seen a few red ones before him, and I'd reflexively checked, but I'd never seen the telltale scar on the belly. This one had the color and the scar. He was nearby, trying to get a spot to eat at the smorgasbord that had once been Bunker 9. I had the clarity of mind to turn on my suit recorder and aim it at the big red bastard, but I only got a glimpse of him before he disappeared in the pack.
"Only one chance," Borges said.
He stood next to me, panting and in pain. He held his right arm oddly, and I surmised he'd been injured. I'd expected him to call a retreat. I fully expected to be ordered to slither down into the tunnels. "Down the chute?" I asked hopefully. He shook his head.
"No good. Officer said it's no good down there."
I felt a chill despite the blistering heat. If the enemy was down in the tunnels, well, this was over. We'd lost the battle.
"I've got to shorten up the focus on my projector, McGill," he said, pausing to gulp air. "You have to help me."
It took me a second to figure out what he was trying to do. He wanted to dial the tube to a shorter burst range. Up close, the belcher would be like a cannon loaded with grape shot. Turned upon rioters, it didn't do as much damage, but it couldn't miss, and it could hit everything at once. Then I saw why he needed my help. His right arm wasn't just injured, it was missing. At some point, one of the monsters had run off with it as a trophy. His suit had automatically sealed the wound so he wouldn't bleed out, but he wasn't able to adjust his weapon. I wriggled close to him and let go of my rifle. I began turning the big circular ring on the outside of the tube. It was hard to move, and I was surprised at the grunting strength I had to apply.
"Hurry up," Borges said. "They're running out of food over there."
I worked harder, and soon it clicked. "That's as far as it goes," I said. He nodded, moving stiffly and slowly. He was in shock, probably, but still in the game.
"Going to aim high. Can't kill them on this setting, but I can blind them."
I liked the idea of that. It sounded like an excellent last-ditch tactic. We didn't have to wait long to try it out. As if a signal had been sounded, and perhaps it had, the team milling around Bunker 9 turned as a group and charged our way. I fired my rifle, having reloaded it in the meantime, but it had no noticeable effect. The enemy was soon swarming around us, and Borges got to his feet and let loose. He lifted that heavy tube with one arm, and I was impressed.
"Down, McGill!" he screamed.
I flattened myself in the darkest gouge I could find of the bunker while Borges burned them. He aimed high just like he said he would, and the monsters were caught in a flare of wide-angled radiation. They howled and raged, thundering around us in instant confusion. Some fell and thrashed, eyes welded shut. Others went mad, snapping and biting their fellows in their agony. Borges was howling, too, with laughter. He spun around, spraying out heat and pain toward any lizard who dared to come close enough. The attack broke. They staggered away, tripping and falling. Borges still laughed and coughed, then laughed again. But suddenly he stiffened. I saw it in his eyes even before I registered the spray of the pellets that had ripped through his body. He'd been standing all this time, exposed. At least 10 rounds had torn through his body and come out the far side. They'd finally taken him down. He fell with his eyes open in disbelief, but a grin was still frozen on his face. I realized I was alone. Everyone else was dead. So much for being a bad grow, I thought to myself. I've outlived them all. Chapter 32. When Borges dropped his weapon, it had rolled out into the open. I grabbed at the tube, snagging the strap and reeling it back into the bunker. I fumbled with it. My snap rifle was ineffective anyway and almost out of ammo. Borges' tube was all I had left. Clamping the tube between my knees, I used both hands to wrench at the focusing dial. It was stiff and would barely move. Something in the mechanism was broken, or the designers hadn't wanted operators to fool with the range settings unless they really wanted to. Outside, I could see the lizards milling, taking cover. Some had fled, but I could tell a few were rallying. I couldn't see any more tails or hear the chatter of human weapons. Only a few places were actively firing, and that was sporadic. I tried to talk to whoever might be in charge, but I didn't get any response on my comlink. That was a very, very bad sign. I tried not to think about the rest of the cohort. This was about me and the last double wave of angry reptiles. I told myself that if I killed them all or drove them off, I'd worry about the rest of my unit afterward. I considered slipping down into the tunnels, but I knew that wasn't going to work. I'd already seen them down there, flittering by in the dark. They were trotting to and fro, probably looking for holdouts and survivors. No, I didn't want to die in the trenches. Out here I had a clear field of fire, and at least I'd meet my end under an open sky. I wasn't sure if the bio-specialists up on Corvus would revive me anyway. If they got another chance to correct the error many thought my continued existence to be, I figured they might take it. I cranked on the tube, getting the focusing dial to move, but slowly. I cursed and growled in frustration. Maybe on the world where this damned weapon was made, everyone had 300 pounds of torque in their hands or claws. I had no idea why it was so hard to move, but I was impressed by the weaponeers that used them. No wonder they were mostly big guys with powerful arms. I heard the telltale click as it snapped into position at last. Configured for longer range, I immediately employed the tube by heaving it onto my shoulder and sighting in the direction of the surviving juggers. I saw a tail sticking out from behind a broken column, and I depressed the firing stud. The results shocked me. The tube rocked in my hands. I hadn't expected recoil. But I knew that the most powerful of lasers and particle beam weapons gave a small kick. Anything that hurled mass and energy out of one end pushed in the opposite direction. The tail was only scorched, but it was withdrawn quickly. I smiled and went hunting for the sniper who had killed Borges. He found me first, spraying a shower of bullets my way. I ducked and waited, counting to 3. Then I popped up again and sighted quickly. Just as I'd hoped, the Saurian had risen up, coming out of cover to get a better shot. Maybe he'd thought he'd hit me. Whatever the case, I caught him full in the chest with a focused beam of energy. He did a backflip and came down in 3 smoking pieces. I was ready for the recoil this time, and I had my arms wrapped around the unwieldy tube. The weapon felt like it wasn't built for humans to operate, and I understood that more clearly every time I tried to use it. Once I had control of the tube again, I looked up, and my jaw dropped. A shape loomed over me. A jugger had come up out of nowhere, probably from behind me while I was firing toward the sniper. I knew right off I was screwed. I was lying in a shallow scratch in the pockmarked courtyard, totally exposed to the teeth of the giant that closed in for the kill. Compounding my sense of shock and dismay, I saw that this Jugger was special. The rigid scar on his belly was unmistakable. This was my mystery lizard back to fight me once again. My first instinct was to attempt to wriggle down a hole. I got my boots in, but I could tell right away I wasn't moving fast enough. I lifted the heavy tube and interposed it between me and the Jugger. This didn't impress him. He lunged, and those huge jaws came down. I saw the wet flesh inside. The mouth was so huge. I was about to be swallowed. But the Jugger's snapping jaws came up short. The tube had hit the back of his throat. Instinctively, he shut those massive jaws. My hands were almost chomped along with the tube. I had no idea what the tube was made of, but it didn't buckle. It didn't even dent. Instead, a dozen 4-inch fangs snapped and blood gushed over me. The Jugger's blood. My fingers sought the firing stud, but I couldn't find it. I realized in horror that the trigger mechanism was inside the Jugger's mouth and closed with countless snaggled teeth. A roar washed over me, and I knew the big lizard wasn't happy. Then he jerked up his head, and I felt the tube being torn from my hands. I scrambled to hold on. It was hard because there was a hot slurry of spit and blood all over that tube, and nothing much to hold on to. But somehow I managed to get one hand wrapped up in the strap and the other hooked on the adjustment knobs. The Jugger reared up, lifting the tube high, and I went with it. I found myself dangling about 15 feet up and looking down at a beast which was eager to finish its meal. I knew what was going to happen next, and it did. The Jugger opened its mouth. I felt myself sliding into the teeth, following the tube which was 2/3 of the way down into that gaping maw. I only had one split-second chance, and I took it. I reached my hands farther along the tube and touched the firing stud. Fortunately, the weapon had been primed and charged. At my touch, it shot a gout of energy directly down the throat of the Jugger. He'd gotten more than he bargained for, I suspected. Dead on his feet, the monster swayed and toppled. His guts were a steaming mess on the ground. When he went down, he thrashed for a moment. I found myself pinned under him. Something hit my head and my helmet dented and the faceplate shattered. I lay there on my back, under 1,000 pounds of shivering reptile. My breath came in ragged gasps. The Jugger had stopped breathing altogether. I tried to move. I tried to free myself, but I couldn't. My comm link was either broken or there wasn't anyone listening. After a period of struggling, I paused and listened. The battlefield was quiet now. I couldn't hear a thing, even with my visor gone and the open, wet heat of Steel World's night air rolling into my face. I don't know how long I laid there. It might have been an hour or 10 minutes. When you're trapped under a mass of flesh, it warps your perspective. Finally, however, I saw something new. Lights glimmered and played over the ground around Bunker 5. I blinked and recognized the vehicle. It was an air car. A nice, shiny one that reminded me of rich, snotty aliens. Could it be the Galactics? Or maybe the Nerbs? It made sense either way. They were inspecting the damage, tallying the count. Who had left more bodies on this bloody field now that it was over? Them or us? I felt an urge to do something. Not so much to get rescued. I didn't really expect them to care about me one way or the other. But I wanted them to know my side wasn't out of this yet. I reached down and drew my sidearm. It wasn't much, sort of like a snap rifle with less power, range, or accuracy, but it did fire pellets when you needed a last-ditch weapon. Very carefully, I sighted on the air car. I squeezed the trigger 4 times, maybe 5. Orange sparks pinged off the bottom of the ship. I knew I'd hit it at least. It wasn't enough to damage the vehicle just to get their attention. The response came about a second later. The air car wobbled, then lifted rapidly. I smiled. Maybe it had been the Galactics after all. They'd been shot down before, and quite possibly they were gun-shy today. I relaxed and considered passing out. But I wanted to see what was going to happen, so I held on to consciousness with an effort of will. The weight of what amounted to a dead dinosaur lying over a third of my body made every breath a struggle. Already my feet were numb. I knew I wasn't going to last the night. Stealthily, the air car returned. I opened one eye and wondered if I'd been dozing. Was I dreaming now? No. The air car played a quiet light over my part of the courtyard. Everything was still. A few bodies twitched now and again, a testament to the raw vigor of these reptiles. They often moved and tremored hours after their apparent deaths. I could see the light only because a scrap of my shattered night vision visor was still operating. It caught the gleam of their lights, showing them as a soft green glow. I wasn't sure if they were using infrared or what, but it was catching the attention of my dying suit. I lifted the pistol again. So as not to frighten the weasels, I shot a few bullets in the air when their light touched me. They had to be able to detect that. They did. The light stopped drifting and focused upon me. I wondered if it was burning my retinas like an infrared laser, but I was too tired and injured to care. I dropped my pistol to my side and lifted my gloved hand to wave at them. Then I gave them the finger, vigorously. The beam seemed to study me for a full minute. I grew tired of shaking my middle finger at them, so I let my hand fall to my side. I was getting sleepy again, but I didn't want to miss whatever happened next, so I struggled to stay awake. Slowly, cautiously, the air car drifted closer. I watched with vague interest, feeling a little lightheaded. Finally, the ship landed nearby, and the hatch opened. A familiar shape emerged. It was a Nairb. It had to be. Either that or someone had taught a terrestrial seal to fly and painted it a globular green. I considered shooting the alien. I really did. I wasn't in my best of moods. These guys had a lot of gall floating around counting bodies. They never died for their planet. They sat in posh offices and made snooty judgments about other people they barely understood. But sadly, my own better judgment kicked in. I simply waited as the creature approached. A translator box clicked and rasped.
"You are a human combatant?"
"Yes," I said. My voice sounded weak, so I cleared my throat and tried again. "Yes. I'm Recruit McGill, of Legion Varus. Please be careful, there is a battle in progress." The Nairb cocked its head and looked around for a moment.
"The battle has ended."
"For the moment," I said. "But although the Saurians have been defeated time and again, they always seem to come back." The Nairb studied me. Another of its kind slithered out of the air car. They spoke together. I gathered they were debating the situation. I lay quietly on my back under the crushing weight of the lizard. I figured that whether I was about to die or not, I'd at least manage to upset the meticulous plan of the Nairbs one more time. That was worth a lot to me.
"I'm sorry," I said loudly. "I can't guarantee your safety if you stay here any longer. As I said, this is a dangerous region."
"There must be some mistake," said the second Nairb, speaking to me for the first time. "Your challengers claimed victory some time ago. They left the field victorious."
"Ha!" I said. "Indeed, there has been a mistake. We've beaten them time and again. It is a common tactic with losers who wish to save face, retreat, and claim victory."
More chatter went back and forth between the two. I tried to shift into a more comfortable position, but was unable to do so. Finally, they returned their attention to me.
You are not a legal combatant. You are disabled.
Not so. I'm pinned under a fallen enemy, that's true, but I'm not dead. I'm still dangerous. I shot your air car, didn't I?
Demonstrate your status. Mobility is required to be considered able-bodied.
He had me there, and I knew it. My mind was foggy, but it managed to come up with a card to play.
Remove this corpse from my person, I said, and I'll show you what I'm capable of.
They chatted about that for a time, then returned to their ship. I called after them, and as their air car floated upward, I drew my pistol again. I cursed them for leaving me for dead. Just as I was about to fire again, aiming for the windows this time, something happened. I felt a tug at the mass of dead flesh that held me down. A few more seconds passed, and the tug grew stronger. I felt myself being pulled with it. I howled with pain. The jugger lifted into the air. How are they doing this? Some kind of focused force field? Some of our troops had shields, but this was something different. The Nerbs were a rich folk indeed. Just as quickly as the field had grown and gripped me, it let go. The body of the dead jugger slipped away from me. I fell on my face. My feet wouldn't hold me. I was on my knees, panting, freed, but in agony. My pulse pounded in my head and purple splotches darkened my vision. I was close to passing out. I could feel it. I gasped like a fish in a boat. I tried to control my breathing and gently rolled myself into a sitting position. I found the two Nerbs staring at me. They studied me with interest.
It's moving. That proves nothing, the translator rasped, interpreting their speech.
I put my hands under me and lifted myself onto my knees again. The Nerbs shuffled backwards on their flippers.
I'm fine, I lied.
Now do you believe me?
Score me as alive. Legion Varus wins.
Wins? No, not at all. There is no chance your people have won the challenge. That has already been determined. Your losses are greater by several hundred corpses. We are only trying to decide if you should be counted as dead, wounded, or able. Our accounting must be complete and accurate.
I sighed. Body count. Wasn't that what they'd said it was all about? Still, I'm a stubborn man. Just ask anyone. I decided I would have to prove myself able. I tried to stand up. The Nerbs backed up further. I stumbled, went to one knee, and stood again, hissing between my teeth.
There, I said. I'm mobile. Thanks for the help. Now, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave. I'm going to have to kill a large number of Saurians to reverse the score.
They made an odd sound. Maybe they were laughing. I really wasn't sure.
Impossible. The odds of success are infinitesimal. Our ruling stands, and there will be no time extension.
I didn't want to believe it, but the doubters were right, I said. The corruption runs deep here on Steel World.
Your references are confusing to the point of being rendered meaningless.
What I'm saying is, you Nerbs don't like my kind, and your judgment is slanted against us.
Corruption, yes. Now I understand the accusation. Do you have any proof of your claims?
You have awarded victory to the defeated. I'm here. I'm able-bodied, and the enemy has withdrawn. Therefore, they are the losers.
Insignificant. The accounting has been precise. No human survives here, other than you. During the conflict, you were badly beaten.
I picked up my pistol painfully. The Nerbs watched me, but did not retreat. I don't think they knew how very, very close I was to shooting them both dead. With difficulty, I controlled myself and kept the weapon at my side.
All right,
I said, shuffling toward the dead jugger. I pointed to his red scales and the rigid scar on his belly.
Take a look at this. This same exact lizard has attacked this compound over and over. He nearly got me the last time, but I killed him yet again.
The Nairbs looked but didn't seem too impressed.
All of these life forms resemble one another.
Take a DNA sample, then. It's the same damn jugger.
DNA sample? Unnecessary. We'll simply check the molecular manufacturing imprint on the cells. Much simpler and more accurate.
Molecular?
I began and trailed off.
Are you saying the revival machines leave an imprint inside each body they produce?
Absolutely. Omitting the imprint would be a violation of galactic law.
Huh, I said, thinking about my own body. Were my cells stamped inside with some tiny sub-microscopic mark? Somehow that idea made me feel a little sick. I shook it off and pressed my case.
What are you going to do about this injustice?
I asked.
I demand to know.
Are you lodging a formal grievance?
Yes, I said quickly. Yes, I'm lodging a formal grievance.
They both made unhappy gargling sounds. I got the feeling that was extra work for them. I smiled tightly at the thought. Although it hurt, I managed to locate and show them another of the bodies with the same scar. Then I transmitted images I'd taken with my suit, all showing the same Saurian dead, with the same scar. For the first time, they seemed interested and paid close attention. When I was finished, I went in for the kill.
There you have it, then, I said. The enemy has been cheating. They used advanced rival technology to lower their body count. Surely you see they must be disqualified.
One of the Nairbs made a sniffling sound.
By no means. This will go into our report, but it is by no means grounds for disqualification. Your forces use the exact same technology, to an abusive degree. Did you really believe we were unaware of that fact?
I paused, mouth open. I had naturally assumed they didn't know we were doing it. In fact, we'd made a living out of abusing revival machines.
A loophole in an accounting system must rightfully apply to all sides, said the Nairb, at least until the loophole is closed.
I didn't like the sound of that. Could the Nairbs be advocating banning revival machines? That would mean every death Legion Varus suffered would be a permanent one. The mere thought was chilling. I wanted to say 1,000 things to those Nairbs. I wanted to shoot them and pound them with my fists. I wanted to find out if their guts were as green as their exterior membranes. But I did nothing. I stood there, swaying slightly on my feet, like a drunk. Overhead, the sky was beginning to lighten. I was vaguely surprised. I had made it to see the dawn. I turned and looked up at the sky. Soon the blazing twin eyes of Kankri would rise in what we called the east.
Why then did you act like you cared?
I demanded.
Why do you have me show you pictures and bodies?
I turned painfully back around to face them, but they were gone. I watched in shock as the second one's green tail vanished into the air car. A moment later, it lifted off into the sky. The suns rose as they always did, painfully bright. I squinted and lifted my pistol, but I lowered it again. Shooting at their ship a few more times wasn't going to gain me anything. We'd lost the challenge. It was over. I heaved a sigh and began hobbling around the stinking, corpse-littered battlefield. I finally found a body I recognized. The nameplate identified him as Adjunct Leeson. I took off my helmet and replaced it with the officer's gear. The fit was a little snug, but it worked. I quickly found the command channel and beamed it up into the sky. After a few minutes, I managed to get none other than Centurion Graves on the channel. "Sir," I said, "this is recording.